And it's a good afternoon, Lagos. Welcome, Lagos, Nigeria, wherever you're tuning in from. Welcome to Borderlines, the only show that takes you beyond borders. You already know my name, so I'm going to get straight through to my guest because he's much more important than me right now, and you will all get to understand why. It's having him on the show is an absolute pleasure and an honor to hear him, and I have been following him and I've seen other interviews. Is actually, I think, possibly one of the most inspiring outcomes, yes, in all things that we must find inspiration. And my guest, Moaz Inon, and I don't know if I've pronounced it right, he will correct me, is one of the most inspiring people. I'm just going to say people, individuals, him and his family, that we've gotten to know, gotten to learn about, gotten to learn from since October 7th. Miles, welcome. How are you?
I'm so thrilled and excited to be with you. And my spirit, even though I'm speaking from Israel, my heart is with you in Lagos and in Nigeria.
Thank you so much. Thank you. You know, it's an honor to speak with you. So there's so much for us to cover because yours is an exceptional story. We've had many, many guests on this show, Israelis, Palestinians, you know, Africans, some who are pro-Palestine, you know, others. We've had other people who are pro-Israel. But your story is exceptional, I have to say. I'm not going to tell it for you because reported speech is never the same as we're taught in journalism, right? So I'm going to ask you, tell us about your wonderful parents, age 75 and I think 78, who were killed on October 7th last year by Hamas. It was a rocket that was that landed into their community, their village. I think, is it Azra?
Netivah,
just over the northern border with Gaza. Yes, which is actually the closest Israeli community to Gaza. Tell us about them. First, we want to know who they were, the sort of people they were, and then what happened on October 7th, and then we'll take it from there.
Yeah. My parents were the most loving and supportive parents everyone can ask. My father Jacobi and my mom Bila. We are five brothers and sisters, and they had 11 grandchildren from 1 year old, the youngest, and 19 years old, the oldest. Eight of them lives in Israel, and the three youngest lives in London. My father was a farmer, admirable farmer, and it's very difficult to be a farmer in the Israeli desert. And he was admired by everyone. He wasn't just cultivating the land. He was cultivating farmers and professors, teaching and innovating through his entire career. He was 78, but working full-time, supporting farmers and all over the country. And he was also the most optimistic person I ever met. So 1 year, I remember from childhood that 1 year there was a drought, and the second flood, and the third insects, and the fourth, he had beautiful crop, but the world prices collapsed, so no one want to buy it. So at the end of each devastating year, he would use to tell me and my siblings, next year I'm going to sow wheat again in the fields, because next year is going to be a better year. Next year, the future is going to be better. I will get the best seeds. I will fertile the land. I'll do everything that within my power, and I will let nature do its part, and then I'm sure the future will be better. And it's just amazing how we was able to give every cell in my body this operating system that I know, I feel, that the future is going to be a better future, but it's up to us to make it this way.
Absolutely.
And my mom, she was a very creative artist. And even back in the 80s, She was doing art from recycled materials and from garbage.
Ah.
And during the summer, during the Israeli summer, we ate a lot of ice cream. And she would ask us to collect all the ice cream sticks, the wooden ice cream stick. And at the end of the summer, she would sit us around the table and give us color and she ask us to paint on those ice cream stick.
Yeah.
And then she glue it on a board and frame it.
Wow.
And it was still hang on the wall till October the 7th. She was practicing Pilates. She was doing yoga, teaching elderly, adult, children. And she refused to take money from her students. She said, mandala, it's a way of living. It's a way to create hope and happiness. I don't want to take money for it.
Mm.
But her students insist that she will be paid. So they reach an agreement that each one is paying as much as he can. And they were really beautiful people in the prime of their life, even they weren't that young.
Mm.
And definitely I miss them very, very much.
I can imagine. And then October 7th happened. Where were you on October 7th? How did you hear what was going on? And tell us what you know happened to your parents on October 7th, please.
So for the last 18 years, I live in Binyamina. It's a small town, halfway between Tel Aviv and Haifa, about 10 kilometers from the coast, Mediterranean Sea. And I woke up early morning, about 7:30, and I checked my WhatsApp, still from bed, and I saw that my father wrote that there are missiles and shooting and alarms and a lot of noise, and that they locked the house and they are in the safe room. It might be sound crazy or not rational in Nigeria, but for us in Israel, it's in where they come from, it's very common. It happens every few months,
right,
or once a year. So I said, okay, it's another day of this day of war. So I've done nothing, just went to make a morning coffee for my wife and for myself. And as the coffee was boiling, I look on the news. It was 7:35, and I look on the news and I saw that there is a Hamas invasion to the Israeli communities in the Israeli side of the border, and this is something that never happened before. So I called my father. It was already 7:40 in the morning, and he answered me right away, telling me that yes, it's very noisy and shooting and bombs and alarms, and they are in the safe room. I could hear my mom in the background. So I told him, send mom my love and love to you, and be safe and talk to you soon.
Wow.
And hanging up, I was watching the news again and again, and I could see that the Hamas invasion and Hamas trucks in the Israeli communities, and this is something like the whole world like basically collapsed in front of my eyes. So I said, I must call dad again. It was just 5 minutes after we spoke.
Mm.
It was 7:45, and this time there was no answer. No one answered.
Wow.
And so I called my mom.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So I called my mom, no answer. I called my sisters, my brothers who live in London. We tried to reach them, reach their neighbors, which of course we all know. We hope it's a electricity failure or cellular reception that went down, and we said it's better that we be together in this day. So we all grouped around 11 in the morning. We grouped at my sister's house, and just that you have some proportion, the size of Israel is about 2.5% of the size of Nigeria. This is the size of Israel. So
yes.
For us to go and meet, it's 1 hour drive, we all meeting. Okay? And the population is about 6% of the population. The 6% between the river and the sea. Israelis and Palestinians, 15 million people, 6% of the population of Nigeria. So we are talking about such a small country and land, and with so little population. So we all grouped together, and we tried to call them again and again and their neighbors, and no answer. And just in 5 in the afternoon, we were able to reach one of the neighbors, and we told them, look, we just want to know what's going on. We don't need a delegation. We don't need the official announcement. Just tell us what's happening. And he told us that my parents' house is burned to ashes and he found two bodies inside.
So, how were you able to deal with that? Once you got that confirmation, what were your thoughts immediately after that and your siblings?
There were no thoughts, it's about a feeling. My entire body ache. It was such a pain that I never witnessed before, and I hope I never, and no one else in the world, no human will witness ever this kind of pain. It's like drowning in the ocean, and there is so much pressure all over your body from the water. So it's something that, you're feeling it. It's not thoughts. It's just feeling, very, very dense feeling. Mm. And of course, I cried a lot, and we've decided to start we have the Jewish way of mourning. We call it Shiva. It's seven.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
7 days of mourning, of wake ceremony. So we started it right away on Sunday morning. My brother was already on his way from London when we heard the news.
Mm.
Because we thought it's not going to end in a positive way. And it was the second morning of the wake ceremony that my brother said, I want from our personal tragedy, but community tragedy, because we lost so many childhood friends. We lost all their parents, all their children that died, were killed, or been kidnapped to Gaza. We lost so many. And my brother said, I want to send you a universal message. I want this message to be not for revenge. We don't want any revenge for the murder of our parents. Revenge won't bring them back to life, and revenge will only make the cycle of blood, of hate, of fear to continue. We must stop this cycle.
Mm.
And he want to send a message, stop this cycle. Don't revenge in the name of our parents. And that same night, I had a vision. I woke up at night crying, and my entire body was in pain. And as I was crying, I could see the entire humanity, everyone. I could see you, I could see my friends, I could see everyone. We were all crying. And then I look over our bodies, and our bodies were wounded from the war. It was a horrible things to look at. And then our tears went from our face and washed our bodies and healed our bodies. It was a miracle. I could see how we became whole and cured again. And only then, after our bodies were cured, I look on the ground. And the ground was red from blood.
Mm-hmm.
It was horrifying. I could see the entire ground blooded. And then our tears from our bodies went and washed the ground, and our tears pure the ground, and it was so beautiful to see a pure and clean ground. And then on this pure ground, I could see the path of peace.
That's you. I had left this studio as you were talking. I was imagining everything you were saying to me. Let's go back a little bit. You grew up in that village near the closest village to Gaza. When you were growing up, had you been around Palestinians? Because one of the things that we learn from a lot of Israelis that I've interviewed, that have been on this show, is that whilst they were growing up, they didn't know any Palestinians. They didn't communicate, you know, or interact with Palestinians. What was your childhood like? Were you able to interact with Palestinians?
You are totally, totally right. It's a different, there is Palestinian in Gaza, in the Gaza Strip, in the West Bank, which is totally different. And it's about 5 million people, Palestinians. And there are 2 million Palestinians that are citizens of the State of Israel. So there are two different status between the river and the sea to Palestinians. Okay, 2 million of them are citizens of Israel. We have more or less, but it's not exactly equivalent, but more or less the same rights as the Jewish citizens of Israel. Mm-hmm. And then there are the five Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza that are under Palestinian authority and in Gaza under the Hamas regime. So in my childhood, it was very easy to cross to Gaza. Very easy. And then we crossed to fix the car or to buy a new bicycle or to go to the restaurant. But something that I remember from early childhood. And then as the time passed by, the wall became higher and higher and the security is stronger and stronger. And so there was no interaction between Jewish Israelis and Palestinians in Gaza and in the West Bank. And even within Israel, it's totally different education system. Different language and different syllabus. And then Jewish Israelis like myself, we go to the army, to the IDF, and the Palestinian within Israel go straight to university. And it's different communities, and sometimes even if it's in the same building, they don't know each other. So at the age of 30, so it's totally different universe. And at the age of 30, after traveling twice, I will need to charge my computer soon.
Please, no worries.
Take one of the computer. Sorry, apologize for this.
No problem at all. No problem at all.
So at the age of 30, after traveling around the world twice in South America and California and New Zealand and Australia and Asia, I realized that I know so much about indigenous people in faraway places, about the Maori in New Zealand, about the Aborigine in Australia, about the Sherpa in Nepal, about the indigenous people in South America. But I know nothing about the indigenous people of Israel. I know nothing about Palestinian. I knew nothing about Ramadan, the month that we are in it now, nothing about Eid al-Fitr or Eid al-Adha. I didn't know where Jesus was born, where he's buried, and was announced. And all this happened here, between the river to the sea. Mm-hmm. And I've decided I must make Palestinian friends. I cannot live my life without making Palestinian friends and partners and know their heritage. So at the year of 2005, when I was 30, I opened a guest house, a hostel, in the old city of Nazareth. Nazareth is the largest Palestinian city within Israel, in the Galilee, about 80,000 residents. And most Jewish Israelis have never been there. Even though it's the city of Annunciation, with one of the most important churches for Christianity, but we don't go there because we don't know anything about Christianity. Mm. So, and it happens to be that in 2005, there was no hostel, no guest house, no accommodation, properties in the old city of Nazareth due to many reasons, but it's become a ghost town. Even though it's so beautiful with architect and culture, it's become the most notorious neighborhood in Nazareth, known for crime, for drug dealers, and for poverty. And I said to myself, and when I walked through those beautiful streets of the old city, that we must open a guest house here. Mm-hmm. Because while traveling around the world, I saw and witnessed how tourism can empower local community, can support local community and help them preserve their culture, their heritage, their lifestyle, and at the same time make money. Because tourism is producing about 10%, and soon it's going to be 15% of the world GDP. It's a huge industry. And if we'll use it to create a shared interest between Jews and Arabs, Israeli and Palestinian, it can contribute significantly to understanding, to know each other, and to create a shared society. So for more than 2 years, I've been involved in initiating nearly 20 initiatives that I partner with Israelis and Arabs, with Palestinians and Jews. So I have so many Palestinian friends and in Israel, in the West Bank, and I preaching to everyone that knowing the other side narrative is the first step in reaching the shared society. You don't, there is no need to understand agree, and no point in arguing, because those two narratives are right, are correct, but they don't match. But even though they don't match, even just we are openly talking about them and about the challenges, the fears, the obstacles of each other, but also about the dreams and the hope, then we can start creating a shared society. And this is what I've been doing for more than 20 years now.
Amazing. You said, so you have Palestinian friends. You're one of the few Israelis who have Palestinian friends, who's been communicating and, you know, just hanging out with Palestinians. After 7/10, what was the conversation like? Did you, you know, you and your Palestinian friends, did you sit down and talk about, confront, we must call it the beast that is 7/10, the atrocity that happened on the 7/10? Were you able to sit down as a group and talk about it? And what was that conversation like?
Yes, I definitely did. And first, I'm not alone. There are many, many, I don't want to say thousands or dozens of thousands, Israelis and Palestinians that are working together. I'm not alone in this ambition to create a shared society. Okay, there are many, many, many of us. So first of all, I got so much solidarity and empathy and support from our Palestinian friend that was overwhelming. The only parliament members who called my family were Arab parliament members. None of the Jewish parliament members, and it's about 110 out of 120 parliament members in Israel, none of the Jewish parliament member called my family. Only two of the Arabs did. And they gave their condolencement, and they say that they are standing with us. They are supporting us against what Hamas has done. And they condemned Hamas. And this was the overall of the feedback we received from Palestinian that we knew for many years, and also new voices from Palestine and the Arab world showing their empathy, sending their condolencement. So there are so many, we receive so much strength and also, but the two main questions, I received one question from the same one from the Israeli side and the Palestinian side. My Israeli friend asked me, Maoz, there are no Palestinians like yourself that want to make peace. They just want to revenge or kill all Jewish people. And my Palestinian friends ask exactly the opposite. Why there are no more Israelis like you that want to make peace and that not just want to kill us and revenge for what Hamas, which we condemned, has done? So I realized we must work together. We must create an alliance between peacemakers, Palestinian and Israeli peacemakers, and we need to create a network to work together and strengthen each other and reach a solution, a diplomatic solution.
Your family on the 9th made a public statement saying you don't want revenge, you want peace, basically saying do not kill in our name. Pretty much you were saying. However, Benjamin Netanyahu declared war on the 8th, and you've since seen what has happened, the carnage that we see. 70% of Gaza is pretty much gone, destroyed. Hospitals, cultural sites, universities, etc. Over 100,000 killed, injured or buried, majority of whom are children. As you continue to watch the genocide unfold, what are the thoughts that comes into your mind? Have you been able to talk to any of the Israeli parliamentarians, especially, you know, as you said, they didn't reach out to you. Have you been able to talk to any of them at all?
First, it's so sad and tragic that civilians are paying with their life and with their household for what Hamas has done. It's so sad, and I'm crying, and I cried for them. publicly and privately, and it's a shame that this war is being going on. And I'm doing all I can, and many other Jewish Israelis doing whatever we can to stop the war, to call for immediate ceasefire, and to call for a diplomatic solution for the hostages and for Gaza. This is my official reaction, and we are protesting. We are trying to send military aid. We are speaking with international community ambassadors, UK, US representative, German representative, and we are calling them to intervene and not to send us military aid, but to send us reconciliation aid, to send us peace aid, and to pressure all leaders in the region to stop the war and to reach a diplomatic solution. And when I'm speaking with Israelis and I'm telling them, look, we were defeated on October the 7th and Israel was humiliated in such a horrible way. But I'm saying them, but we keep losing now for more than 5 months. There is still no security and safety, not in the border in Gaza and not in the border with Lebanon. The hostages are not being returned, and so many lives are being lost in those months. And the only borders that are safe and secure are borders in which we have diplomatic agreement, peace accord with Egypt and with Jordan. And the only way to achieve security and safety for the people of Israel, but it's for all people, two people, only by peace. There is no other solution.
Indeed. And go ahead.
And we must choose this path. And I want to share with you some of the lessons I learned.
Please do.
In those 5 months, because I think it's important, not just for me, it's really important. And I must also, before that, like why it is so important to me to speak to you and to the people of Nigeria. My spiritual leader for the last maybe decade is the Nigerian musician and peace and activist Fela Kuti.
Okay.
I'm a big admirer of his work and his preaching. And I'm using his words for many, many years now. And I'm mostly using the words from his song, Viva Africa, Long Live Nigeria.
Long Live Nigeria, yeah.
Where he says, war is not the answer. War has never been the answer. And war will never be the answer. And this is my way of living. And this is my spirit. And this is why I'm feeling connected in a way. It's difficult also to explain words to your culture. So I want also to share it.
Please go ahead. Take your time.
Okay.
We're feeling it. Go ahead.
Yeah. So it's part of me. All many of my close now and friends, when friends are going to visit Nigeria, they are going to the shrine in Lagos. And they are giving me, they're bringing me T-shirts and sweatshirts and other. And I'm just he's a spiritual leader. So it's also very important for me. And the lessons I learned since October the 7th, many of them were from Palestinian peace activists. And one very important one is Hamza Awade. He's from the city Ramallah in the West Bank. And he said, in an interview, when the host asked him, Hamza, where do you see hope? Where do you see hope in such a time of bloodshed and death and killing? And he told her, I don't see it. I make it. Hope is an action. We must make hope. So from that moment, I'm making hope with Israelis and Palestinians, with Jewish and Arabs. We are making hope. We are trying to send humanitarian aid to Gaza. We are calling to stop the war. We are building a shared society here in Israel between Jews and Arabs and aligned who is Palestinian in the West Bank and in Gaza. We are making hope. It's an action. And this is what we are doing now, making hope. And then he also said, after his grandparents were expelled from their village with the independence of Israel and what Palestinians call the Nakba, and is after 57 years of occupation, and he said, I'm willing to forgive about the past, I'm willing to forgive about the present, but I won't forgive about the future, not to myself and to no one else. And I listened again to this interview, and I slept over it all night. And then I told myself, Maoz, you want to be a great person like Hamza Awade. What does it mean to forgive? It means I need to forgive Hamas for killing my parents. It means I need to forgive the Israeli government, who is accountable and failed in delivering the most important promise the state, the government, is giving to its citizens to keep their life. I must forgive them. And I must put all my energy and time in building the shared future. And this is what I'm doing now. And after speaking to so many Palestinian Israelis in the last 20 years, but in the recent months, I realized that our tribe, the Palestinian and Israeli tribe, was split back in the holy books, the Old Testament and the Quran, with the different chosen son. Abraham had two sons, and the Jewish people, we believe that the chosen son is Isaac, and the Palestinian believe the chosen son is Ismail. And since then, we are going on a parallel stories. We don't meet. And then, in the last century, from the beginning of the Zionist movement at the end of the 19th century and the Palestinian movement at the same time, the gap between the stories is getting wider and wider. And with each war we are waging on each other, the gap is getting wider and wider. And now today, March 15th, 2024, the gap is wider than ever. The differences were never bigger. But, and there is a big but, there is a magic. And the magic is that our stories meet in the future. We meet in the future, I promise you. We meet in the future. Future that is based on equality and justice, acknowledgement and recognition, reconciliation, security, and safety to all. All people living between the river to the sea. And it's within our part and our mission is that this future will come soon. It's not going to be in our lifetime, not in a generation. We must make this future coming soon. And this is what we are doing now. We are building a coalition of Palestinian Israelis, individual and organization, to work on the ground to create this future. And we are reaching out to international community. And this is why it's so important to me to speak to you. We want to reach out to the people of Nigeria. We need you to stand with us in this effort to bring peace to the land between the river and the sea.
Wow, amazing. Lagos, Nigeria, wherever you're listening to, I hope you are. You can send your messages, questions or otherwise, to 0809-597-5805. You can call, and I'll try and pick up your call on 0700-993-993-993. And, you know, Maoz would be able to answer some of your questions, but you get one question only, please. One question only. Because you don't know my listeners. You're shaking your head, Maoz. You don't know my listeners. They will take over the show. Honestly.
Okay.
As soon as I say, the lines have gone crazy. and then you mentioned Fela. The minute you mentioned Fela, that's it. Everybody's like, oh, we need to talk to him. We need to talk to him. So let me answer the calls. I'm coming to your calls right now. Say your name, where you're calling from. Okay. And your question, please. Right? I'm coming to your calls. Hello? Hello? Hello, good afternoon. What's your name? Where are you calling from, please?
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. The line isn't very good. You may have to call back.
Oh, is it better now?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Thank you very much, ma'am. I want to say good afternoon.
The line is not good at all. I need you to call back. I'm so sorry. Hello? Oops. Hello? Hello? Okay. Hello?
Hello?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What's your name and where you calling from, please?
My name is Umar Hudu Garba. I'm calling from Pestac.
Okay, Umar. Your question, please.
I don't have a question. I just have an addition on what you said.
A short comment then.
Mm-hmm. Sorry?
A short comment.
Okay. I think he is the only person I had throughout the conflict who is really truly need the peace. And he give a point where you can understand as a listener. You understand that this man, he is true to what he is saying.
Mm.
And I really like what he thought of saying, war cannot be the solution and it will not be the solution and it cannot be the solution.
Mm.
Sure, I really like all what he said.
Okay.
And I hope very soon the peace will come.
Thank you.
Hello. Thank you.
Hello. Hello. Hello, you need to speak, otherwise we can't hear you. Hello? Hello? Okay. All right. You can call us back on... Hello?
Hello?
Yes, good afternoon. What's your name and where are you calling from, please?
Okay, good afternoon. Sorry.
Good afternoon. You need to speak louder, please.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, better. Thank you.
Yes, okay.
Bayo, go ahead.
I want to ask your guest. After all these wars now, from October 7th, right? I know definitely there's going to be an end to it. But, I mean, what will the post-war relationship
be like?
Between the Palestine and Israel be like? Or, there's it going to be a scar of a kind of, I mean, a prepared mind to any little upset.
Okay.
You understand?
I do.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll come to you, Miles, in a moment. Let me just answer this. Hello?
Yeah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yeah,
please?
My regards to your guest.
Yes.
Yeah, my name is Rapuchiku.
Okay, Rapuchiku, go ahead.
Okay, no, regardless, everything your guest said, I am valid and I welcome it. All we are saying, everywhere, everybody saying, let peace come. Let that peace come. We want that peace to come.
Okay.
Thank you and God bless you.
Thank you. Right. So I have one question, Miles, which is, and it's an interesting question. Okay. Hello, Miles, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yes, okay, because I was seeing some interference on the Zoom. The question was, what is the future? What do you see the future like between Palestinians and Israelis after the war? Even though, yes, we know it's going to end, but what do you think the relationship will be like?
Okay, it's a very good question.
Yeah.
And I see the future is like now in Europe, between France and Germany. In the 20th century, millions, they killed among each other millions of people, millions French and millions of German were killed during the First World War and the Second. Mm. Millions. And now there is no border, there are no checkpoints, there is one currency, there is one passport, and they are all voting for the European Parliament. It's not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen tomorrow. but it's something we need to imagine. And after we'll imagine it and dream about it, we need to create a roadmap that will take us there. But this is peace. And also Egypt and Israel. Egypt were Israel's biggest enemy. And the war of October 73, which was the most devastating war for Israel. And people, the Israelis, people of Israel were afraid Egypt is going to win and to erase the Jewish existence and the state of Israel from the planet. And only 4 years after, it took only 4 years for President Sadat to visit Jerusalem, an historical visit. Until this visit, the people of Israel were against negotiating, even not against the peace accord. They were against negotiating with Egypt. And even though the Israeli knew that Sadat is coming, snipers were waiting at the airport in case it's a terrorist attack. Snipers were waiting for Sadat. And of course, Sadat arrived, and Begin, our prime minister, said in an historical speech that we can prevent the war, but we cannot prevent peace. Peace will definitely happen. And 2 years after, they signed a peace agreement between Egypt and Israel. And now, not even one, or like you can count on one hand the casualties and the victims in this large and long border between Israel and Egypt since 79. And this is peace, security, and safety to all people. So this is how it should be between Israel and Palestine. And it's achievable, and it will be achieved. And we just need to work very, very hard. And we need your support. We need the support of the Nigerian people. Help us amplify our voices, the voices for peace, the voices for reconciliation, for equality. And together, we can make Israel and Palestine a model how nation, tribes can reconcile and can end wars and start living among each other in peace.
Thank you. Right, the calls, the lines are still going. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, good afternoon. What's your name? Where are you calling from, please?
I'm Usman from Aja.
Sorry, can you speak up, please?
I'm Usman calling from Aja.
Okay, go ahead, Usman. What's your question?
This is a very touching something to hear.
Thank you.
I feel so pity for a country, a very small country, having all these kind of issues. Very, very pity.
Yeah, but what is your question, please?
I don't have a question.
Okay, you just want to comment. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
The man I'm talking looks very nice, man.
Mm-hmm.
And tried to join the countries together, but nobody knows what's the problem.
Okay. Thank you.
And he's, for a fasting period, I wish him the best, and God will help him, because he's a Muslim brother. So God will help them, and all this will settle.
Yeah, he's not Muslim, but thank you very much. Thank you. Right, okay. I think what you find is many people are touched by your story, and like I said, it is an exceptional one. And you may look at yourself as, you know, I'm just Miles, you know, my parents are just like that, you know, that's who I am, I'm not doing anything exceptional. But you know, I read a quote about grief today, this morning, just this morning incidentally, and I'm trying to remember it accurately. It said, grief is the love that has nowhere to go. But what you've done with your grief is actually to spread it and give it and turn it into the love that has a way to shape and to reshape and to reshape the world. Not just your world, but the world in general, the global world, the conversation. Which brings me back, because whatever we do as citizens and as individuals, the politicians are always there somehow seeming to actually, you know, sort of overturn the efforts that we're making. What are your expectations? I mean, we know that Benjamin Netanyahu, he's in trouble politically, and the chances are, if there was an election yesterday, he would have lost the election. However, as I said earlier, have you been able to talk to the politicians? Are you able to reach out to Israeli politicians? Not the far right Ben Gurions of, you know, of Israel, but there must be liberal politicians in that parliament who are actually very much for peace, like you are, but we don't hear enough from them.
I'm afraid the political situation and system in Israel now is in such a devastating situation, and that I've decided to invest no time and energy in speaking to them. And they are all more or less the same. Some more corrupted, some less corrupted, but they have no imagination. They have zero political imagination, and they are still trapped in the conception that just military aid and a huge security budget will bring security and peace to Israel, which was proven wrong on October the 7th. They are still trapped in this false conception. So I think they are irrelevant in the moment, as same as the Palestinian leaders. We were kidnapped by extremist politicians that want to polarize the conflict and strive over war, blood, fear, and hate. And this is why we need to align the common people all over the world. We need to align and work together in promoting equality, not just for Israelis and Palestinians, but worldwide, to promote equality and justice and reconciliation, and to stop the war. War is not the answer. We learned that from Fela Kuti. War is not the answer. The answer is alliance between common people, regular people, that we need to create a powerful movement to change the world. And we can change the world. The world has been changed many, many times. And it's time for another revolution of peace, revolution of reconciliation. We must choose non-violence approach, and we must work together and to find partners, even with those that we were taught and educated that they are our enemies, but not they are. They aren't. They can and will be our true partners.
We've got, I think, 5 minutes left. If Hamas, you said you've forgiven Hamas. If Hamas was sitting in front of you now, if you were the one negotiating the ceasefire, what would your message to them be?
I wish it would happen. And I'm calling Hamas to sit in front of me. I'm calling them. And I would go for anywhere in the world to meet Hamas. And I will tell them, I forgive you. I forgive you. I don't want war with you. I don't want revenge. I want you and your children and grandchildren and daughters and granddaughters to live in equality, to live in peace and in harmony. And now this land between the river and the sea is not belong to us. We belong to the land. And now let's settle down and see how we can find common ground between us, how we can share life and share future, that we all live in dignity. And I'm calling everyone. I would go to meet everyone everywhere, if it's Hamas, if it's in Iran, if it's in Hezbollah in Lebanon. I will meet everyone and I'll tell them, I have no war with you. I have no need for revenge. I will ask them also to forgive for what Israel or my people done to them. We must start a reconciliation process. It's not going to be one day. We learned many lessons, some of them also from Africa, that reconciliation is not a one day event or convention. It's a process. Reconciliation might take generation, but we can achieve it. Human beings have achieved it before. And let's also show the world so that we can also forgive and reconcile. This is humanity.
Okay.
Reconciliation and forgiveness.
And then what would your message be to Biden, to Joe Biden?
Again, my message to Biden will be very practical message. To match every dollar of military aid, to match it with peace aid. If there will be, it will, the US and the EU will invest 5 billion euro every year in peace and reconciliation between Israelis and Palestinians. We'll have peace in less than 1 year. It's going to be so fast.
Mm.
The EU invested billions in North Ireland conflict to resolve and end the conflict. But they are investing nothing, nearly nothing, here between Israelis and Palestine. So support us. But because if you are sending us weapon and military aid, of course the outcome will be war.
Mm.
So we must change our action, and then the outcome will also be different. But if the action is the same and the same, unfortunately, the result is, again, war, fear, blood, and revenge.
Indeed. And finally, what compromise would you recommend that both sides make in terms of land? So you have, you know, you have the occupiers, most of whom are in the West Bank, you know, the settlers. You've got Gaza. You have the likes of Miko Peled, who say that the only solution is a one-state solution. Then you have the international community, the political international community, who are saying it's a two-state solution. What compromise would you recommend is the and which is the best solution that you would go for?
Now I will need to ask for your forgiveness, if it's okay. I want to say something different. I would
please go ahead
to be in your show. I would love to talk to you again. I would love to. And
okay.
I promise that I also come to Lagos and I come to the studio.
Absolutely.
I want to share with you a dream that I had a few days after the vision of the path of peace.
Yeah. We have just 2 minutes left. Go on quickly.
I'll do it quick.
Okay.
Again, I woke up crying at night and a star was speaking to me. A star, like we are speaking now, a star was speaking to me, telling me he's the star of peace. And I must follow him. I must follow the star of peace. And I want to show you the mandala.
Mm-hmm.
The only mandala my mom gave me.
Mm-hmm.
When of thousands of mandala. And it's written here, all our dreams can be fulfilled if we'll have the courage to chase them. And this, in this catalog that my sister made for my mom 70th anniversary, there is the mandala of star.
Mm.
So I'm calling everyone. I'm calling humanity. I'm calling the people of Nigeria. Let's together follow the star of peace. Let's find the courage to choose peace, to choose reconciliation and equality for everyone.
Maros Enon, did I pronounce your name right? Is it Enon? Am I pronouncing it right?
It's perfect.
Okay.
You're perfect. Thank you.
Israeli peace activist. No, thank you so, so much. The love is from us. It's from me in the studio. It's from all my listeners. The lines are going crazy. I'm not able to answer all of their calls. Thank you so much for being generous, for sharing your story, and for inspiring all of us to be better human beings. Thank you, Miles.
I love you. I really love you.
Thank you.
Present world. I just love you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful weekend. And you will be back. I promise you. We will have you back.
I would love to. I would love to. It would be an honor.
Okay. Take care. All the best.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.